We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how are we doing?
Sigh.
Another Nets loss. They're starting to pile up. They lost at home to OKC in overtime, 111-103. And this one hurt, Jack.
It hurt. It feels like getting stabbed in the back, stabbed in the heart, and stabbed in all the major arteries and organs. This game was there for the taking, Nick, and a lot of it was on our best player, the guy who's kept us afloat of late, Spencer Dinwiddie, who just couldn't execute in all crucial times. He made bad shot selection. He missed free throws. And our best player for the game was sitting on the bench, and he didn't look happy. And I think that he was Nets fans personified.
Before we get into it any deeper, just a quick reminder, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, what went wrong down the stretch? You know, the Nets had a four-point lead late in that fourth quarter. You know, OKC was able to tie it. They did have an opportunity to shoot a free throw at the end. But how do they lose the lead? And they kind of weren't able to continue to score late in that game.
Well, one of it is that Chris Paul is just a beast. And you've got to give credit where credit is due. He's just hitting everything. And, you know, Corey and I, debated quite a bit about him, and I think his scoring of late and his leadership, things on and off the court, he's just been an absolute monster. And, you know, he's killed the Nets in the past on Houston. I know last season when I think James Harden was out, it was Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony that were just absolute beasts against us. And, you know, he talked his talk and he backed it up. He's just an incredible player, and despite the contract. But I think that we just couldn't execute offensively late, Nick. I thought that we looked okay, but we didn't look to make right plays. We just put the ball in Spence's hand and sort of entrusted him to go, all right, let's make a play for us, Spence, like you've done for us, you know, the past 30 games or so this season. But he just wasn't doing it all night. The first half, he didn't score. The second half, you know, he started driving the ball. Coach Kenny gave him a bit of a spray, and then he started to score the basketball by driving. He didn't hit a jumper. Like, he didn't hit a jumper tonight. So the fact that he continued to take jumpers, you know, mid-range jumpers, I'm like, dude, you're not CP3, and then take a three. Dude, you're not Kyrie Irving or Stephen Curry. It was just a dumb game from Spencer, and from a player that we, you know, associate with being really, really smart, savvy, and making the good decisions.
Yeah, it feels like every other game on this losing streak, you've been able to kind of depend on Spencer. Maybe the numbers weren't pretty, but he played essentially well. Tonight, you know, a lot of other guys stepped up, and Spencer, like you mentioned, had one of his worst games of the season. You know, that shot he took late in the fourth quarter, that pull-up three, I thought that really hurt the Nets and hurt the momentum, especially when Caris LeVert was cooking at that point. You maybe want to get the ball in his hands or take that shot later in the shot clock when nothing else has worked. But like you mentioned, decision-making was really bad, especially in that overtime. You probably have shot maybe 10 mid-range shots all season. I think he attempted three between the fourth quarter and overtime. It's just, why go to that game? He just did not look aggressive. It was almost like he was scared of Steven Adams in the paint.
Yeah, and a lot of the time, you know, the Steven Adams isn't necessarily an amazing rim protector. He's, you know, a large unit, an Aquaman. He certainly has the physicality, and he's a sexy dude. I'm a big fan of Steven Adams, but he's not that amazing of a defender. He is above average and very good, but he's not Rudy Gobert. He's not Joel Embiid. You know, he's probably on a similar level, maybe a little bit above what Jared Allen is. And Jared Allen, you're more scared of because you're going to get on the highlight reel with a lot of those blocks. And, you know, he had plenty of those tonight on both the offensive and defensive end. But, yeah, it just seemed to me that every single time in my head, I'm like, drive, Spence, drive. And I was yelling it out, you know, with my dad and my dog here. And he would just settle. And it's just like, that's what we saw from in moments with Spencer last season. And we expected, you know, a bit of maturity, a bit of growth. You learn from those mistakes. But he just continued to take them. And it was just infuriating, absolutely infuriating. And obviously, Caris LeVert not being out there in OT, we saw his face. We've all seen that image already. If you're some sort of a Nets fan, I'm sure you've seen it. I put it on my Twitter. Everyone else is sharing it like wildfire. I don't know, man. This is one of the most frustrating losses that I can remember, because if Spencer hit that free throw, the Nets win the game.
Yeah, that free throw was big. Getting back to that, obviously, you know, last possession of the game, Dennis Schroeder fouls Jared Allen before the Nets inbound the ball, so they get the one free throw and possession. Obviously, they didn't hit the shot, and they didn't hit the free throw either. Would you have went with Spencer Dinwiddie, or would you have went with Joe Harris, or maybe even Caris LeVert?
Look, statistically on the season, Spencer Dinwiddie is our best free throw shooter. He's about 81%. I know Joe Harris is late 70s, I believe. I don't have it right in front of me right now. Caris LeVert is 70%, if that. So you can rule out Caris LeVert. Jared Allen, obviously. But Joe Harris just seems to have been more poised of late. And I can understand why you would put it in his hands in this specific instance. But Spencer Dinwiddie is the leader of this team. And he is a guy that has hit free throws. You know, he is our best free throw shooter right now with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant out. So you put the ball in the guy who's supposed to be hitting those free throws. But at the end of the day, you live by it and you die by it. And we died by it, and pretty badly. And, you know, maybe it was up to Spencer to go, look, I'm not feeling it tonight. I'm going to give this one to Joe. But he stepped up and he's expected to hit that. And he should have hit that.
And you kind of mentioned being a leader of this team. He did not have great body language tonight, and it did not help the team late in overtime, especially when Caris LeVert wasn't out there. It felt like the momentum was down, and that's when you kind of need someone to step up and be aggressive, even though it's not your night. We've seen in the past, I'm not making comparison to players, but you know, I look back to last season against Cleveland. D'Angelo Russell was having a terrible game. In one of those overtimes, in the final overtime, he stepped up and got his team a W. You kind of wanted to see that from Spencer tonight, knowing Caris wasn't going to play in that OT.
Do you think that spray from Kenny worked to an extent, but then sort of stuck with him? I'm being, you know, body language doctor a little bit here, Nick, but you know, Spencer is rarely, you know, getting on the end of a spray from Kenny Atkinson. It's always, you know, yeah, it's Musa or it's D'Angelo Russell from last season. But tonight it was Spencer, and we've rarely seen that.
Yeah, I think they probably have more of that stuff happen behind the scenes, less on the court. But I think he was aggravated by Spencer, because on that specific play where he did spray him, that's a spot Spencer's always in. He had Steven Adams off balance, and instead of kind of attacking the rim, he decided to throw it out to Taurean Prince, and Chris Paul was reading it all night. It's like Spencer did when he forgot who Chris Paul was. Both of his turnovers were passes against Chris Paul. So, like, yo, you need to understand who you're playing against, and obviously he just didn't have that aggressive. So I think the spray maybe could have possibly helped. It helped for a little bit, but it didn't help in that second half or late in the game. I think Spencer just had bad body language overall. You know, these people are humans. You know, everyone has an off day. It looked like he just wasn't feeling today in general, not just basketball. Like, today was not his day.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone has those off days, Nick. We're entitled to them. But it's about having the awareness and going, this isn't my day. And just trying to do the things that are the simplest and lead to, you know, the highest results. And, you know, he did that for maybe a 3 or 4 minute period where he just drived. And he got to the basket and he got some foul calls. You know, there was a time earlier where against Steven Adams, and he sort of, you know, gave him a little bit of a shove. And Chris Paul was like, look, just keep an eye on that. You could tell that the mentality was off, like you were sort of saying, Nick. And I know Steven Adams is a big, burly dude and he can hurt you. I know Jimmy Butler in the past has said that his screens hurt more than anyone else in the league. But he's actually quite a friendly giant. He's a bit of a BFG. Like, a lot of the times where, you know, he gets a basket, you know, he'll help Jared Allen up or Joe Harris. You know, he doesn't have that, you know, FU sort of mentality where he's, you know, incredibly aggressive in terms of the way he plays. But, you know, Spencer was off tonight, Nick, and at the end of the day, we almost won the game despite our best player of the past 20 games or so playing one of his worst, if not his worst game of the season.
Yeah, and I'll just touch on Steven Adams. Honestly, sometimes that makes it worse. When someone is like physically hurting you, but then they're being very nice to you, it almost aggravates you more. So I could see why, you know, guys get aggravated with Steven Adams because he's such a nice guy, but it doesn't make those screens hurt any less, or when he hits you with an elbow accidentally or whatever it may be. So I think he could definitely frustrate guys. We've seen that a lot in the past, but obviously, this is what happens when you bring back another fringe all-star player in Caris LeVert. You know, you mentioned it, Jack. Spencer Dinwiddie, not on his game, but you instantly could feel the energy Caris LeVert brought to the second unit and to the Nets team in general.
I know that you said it as well, Nick. I think every single person who watched this game, when LeVert and Dinwiddie are out there together, it's just like, oh, I felt a semblance of calm to an extent. I'm just like, okay, we have two capable ball handlers who can create their own shot. A guy like Caris LeVert, funnily enough, can hit a pull-up, you know, jumper. He has worked on that, and he has shown that in the past two performances that he can do that. Spencer Dinwiddie's game is predicated on being aggressive and getting to the hole. Caris can do that too, but I think that Spencer is a little bit better at it than him. You know, obviously they are different players, but having both of them on the floor just made things flow better offensively. When you have two quality players that can create their own shot, it just makes things a lot easier. It opens things up. It opens up the lane. It opens up the perimeter. It allows Jared Allen to get some lobs and some open dunks and to, you know, nail some screens. But, and Coach Kenny, the fact that he went away from it is just like, I mean, we're going to hear the superlatives. It's like, well, we had to look at what our medical staff were saying, but it's just like, sometimes you just got to win the game. And the Nets could have won this game if they had Caris LeVert out there. And that's probably the most frustrating thing. I know I'm getting plenty of mentions about it. People throwing chairs and ripping hair out. I've got a lot of hair, Nick, but by the end of this season, if this keeps happening, I'm going to be bald.
Yeah, it's been rough. And just to touch on Caris's game first and playing with Spencer Dinwiddie out there, it allows Spencer to play point guard because, hey, on one end of the floor, they might be running an action for Joe Harris at getting the attention of the defense. Then he can hit Caris LeVert. He has an isolation, no one protecting the rim. We saw that instance in this game. So having two playmakers out there is really crucial. And I think it's crucial for this Nets offense. When they really performed at their highest peaks last year, it's when they had two playmakers out there, especially game one of the playoffs against the Sixers when they had three playmakers at some times. But, Jack, do you think Kenny should have went against the medical staff and played Caris a couple extra minutes, or do you think that's a relationship that maybe he needs to keep the trust in and say, hey, they said I can only play him 22 minutes. I'm only playing him 22 minutes.
Look, at the end of the day, Nick, we can say what we want as fans. We want to have our best players out there when there is a chance to win. But we've seen this in the past as well, where guys have been rested. Guys haven't had the extended minutes. Caris LeVert, we've said it a million times, had a thumb injury. Not a knee injury, not a leg injury. His conditioning was fine. He was the best player out there. 20 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 of 3 from 3, and 4 of 7 from the free throw line, 7 of 16 from the field. If you don't have your best player out on the floor, you don't want to win this game. And I'm implying and I'm inferring, but at the end of the day, this game, this whole league is judged on wins and losses. And if you lose this game, it has to be on you. And maybe he should blame the medical staff. I would rather see that and go, look, the medical staff told me I couldn't do that. I'm like, all right, well, then I trust you that you wanted to have him out there. Or like you said, Nick, maybe he has to play the sort of party line where it's just like, look, at the end of the day, where we manage our players the way we want to. We spoke about it the other day when Caris was back and Jared Dudley said, you know, the fact that he rested the Orlando Magic game. But this was a winnable game. To get off a 6-game losing streak and you have your best player that is available and healthy sitting on the bench, it boggles belief.
Yeah, I agree, Jack. I think in this instance, maybe if you don't play him the entire overtime, you put him in a 3-minute mark, you want to get him some more rest, whatever it may be. I don't think there's a dramatic difference between 22 and 25 minutes. I don't think that's going to re-injure Caris LeVert's thumb, considering I think he played 16 or 17 minutes in the first game. He had a day of rest. They're not playing again to Friday. I think it just hurt the overall vibe of the team. And Kenny talked about it in a couple, you know, press conferences after the game or, you know, interviews, whatever it may be, saying how Caris LeVert provided energy. And he's kind of not like one of the direct leaders of this team, but he just knows how to play basketball and provides a spark for them. And you could feel Spencer having a bad night and Caris not out there in the overtime. The team didn't feel like they could win.
Yeah, it's I can't really say anymore, Nick, because it's just it's getting frustrating to see just these little, you know, things that, you know, we know that the wins are within grasp, and I think these wins are more frustrating than, you know, when the team is performing poorly, because, you know, I think overall we could go through, you know, most of the guys. Torian Prince performed well. Rodion Skuritz performed well. Jared Allen performed well. Joe Harris performed probably not great. Wilson Chandler, okay. DeAndre Jordan had a, you know, 10 boards. You know, he was back. You know, TLC, you know, was okay. And Garrett Temple, I thought, was much better in an ancillary role. So when you have, you know, eight of your 10 players playing well in the rotation, you expect to get a win, because a lot of the time we haven't had our role players stepping up and we had our best player performing poorly, yet at the half, the Nets still had a lead. So it's just there's so many things that when you are that close to a W and it's almost taken away from you from stupid decisions from coaching and your best players, that's what makes it tougher to swallow.
Yeah, especially because if they have this performance against one of the other teams they faced, you know, a team like Minnesota or even against Orlando in the last matchup, that's a W. Tonight it was against a better team, an OKC team that's, you know, they lost last night against Philly, but they've been playing well. They've secured a playoff spot in the West as of now. So it would have been a nice win. End that losing streak, give you some positive momentum, because like you mentioned, Jack, some guys who've been playing bad lately have really stepped up. Who do you want to talk about first, Torian Prince or Jared Allen?
Let's get to Torian Prince in, because I think he sort of really kick-started his game. He was hitting those three balls, 5 of 10 from there. He continued to rebound the ball well. I thought, you know, he had a few defensive lapses, but, you know, he had, you know, he really stepped back up. And, you know, when that three ball is dropping, he just turns into an incredibly different player. And, you know, we were pretty savage on him in a few of the recent buzzes, but it was warranted because he had been performing poorly. And, you know, 21 points, 8 rebounds, you know, dropping a dime, a steal and a block there as well. It was a really good performance from Torian. And the fact that, you know, Joe Harris couldn't necessarily shoot well from three, it's always just like it's one or the other a lot of the time. If we can get both of those guys going, boy oh boy, two of, you know, the most, you know, savvy, you know, capable three-point shooters. I know Torian Prince has to perform that way, but, you know, we need both of them shooting well to really see the fullest extent of this team. But Torian really stepped up and really got the Nets going in that first quarter when, you know, the offense lacked a little bit of flow at times.
Yeah, it looks like when Torian Prince is having a good night, he looks so much more confident, and even his three-point stroke I think looks a little bit quicker. Like, he's ready to go and he's just launching it. And other times where he's having a bad night, he thinks about it. And then also I saw tonight a couple times he had successful drives where he didn't stop at, you know, the restriction line, or he just laid in and used a glass. So that's a positive. Like you mentioned, Jack, I think defensively there's still plenty of stuff to clean up, but it's a nice game in the right direction.
Yeah, it's a step forward. And, you know, when we do a post-game podcast where we recap every single game pretty much, then we analyze each performance with its merit. And tonight was an incredibly good performance from Torian Prince. And, you know, I really liked Rodion's in the starting lineup as well. What did you think, Nick?
Yeah, I liked Rodion's. I thought he provided a nice spark, pesky defender, and he's also very switchable. He had no issue defending guards at times, defending bigs. He gets in there, those offensive rebounds, poking his fingers in there. And then also, you know, Spencer hitting him on that cut for the oop. I liked Rodion's. I thought, again, you know, he probably should have got a couple more minutes out there. Garrett Temple played 28, Rodion's played 19. I don't think it's a big deal if Rodion's takes some of Garrett Temple's minutes, because Rodion's is so versatile defensively.
I've said this before, and I'll repeat it again for people who might have missed it. Rodon's is improving his passing, and I think with that, his intelligence and his game awareness is just
four assists.
Four assists, exactly. And I think in that sense, the imagination, he's impacting the game in ways where obviously we know his energy, and that oop was probably Spencer Dinwiddie's best player of the night. But Rodon's is continuing to cut, and, you know, I put the tweet out there. He's just incredibly crafty. He's incredibly sneaky. And, you know, I think he deserves to keep starting with this team, because I think the balance is a little bit better. And I think, like you said, Nick, he's more athletic, he's switchable, he can get out in transition a little bit better than Garrett Temple, and the balance just works.
Yeah, I think fundamentally, defensively, he still has things to learn as a team defender, but you can't ignore the fact that he just makes teams feel him. Like, you know, Rodion's is out there if he's defending you, because he's just going to make you work that extra inch that a lot of the Nets defenders don't force.
Yeah, and I think in that sense, the imagination, I liked how he defended SGA a lot of the time. He was an incredibly capable player, and then, you know, he would be forced onto some of the other sort of bigger wings, more physical wings that OKC have as well. You know, it's just like, you know, this guy is, you know, we were sort of talking about early in the season, it's just like, where's Rhodey gone? And we've now sort of seen him regain his confidence. Maybe, you know, it's a mental thing, but I think it certainly is a large thing, a mental thing. But for Coach Kennedy to show the confidence in him and to put him in the starting lineup, and like we said, we said changes needed to be made, and this change did work. It's just a shame that so many other things were done wrong that were incredibly important as well.
Yeah, I mean, especially just Spencer Dinwiddie having such a rough game in a game where we just needed him to pretty much be mediocre in 70% of what he's been over the last month. But getting to Jared Allen, I was going to say before it went into overtime, this is probably one of Jared Allen's best games defensively. I just felt his impact all over the court, but he got isolated so many times on Chris Paul, and he kind of just abused him. I know Chris Paul's a great player, but I think Jared Allen was starting to give him just too much space because the height differential, for Chris Paul to even get a shot up, Jared Allen has to be giving him a good amount of room.
And I think that's where Jared Allen can be guilty of sometimes when he is switched onto those guys. He is good when those guys try to drive on him. But when
like we saw at the end of the game where Chris Paul dribbled the ball off his leg.
Exactly. When they drive on him and when they try to, you know, try to be forceful and try to, you know, dribble past him, he is incredibly savvy in that regard. But when he's defending those guys out on the perimeter and they take a jumper, he just always seems wary of giving away a foul. And he always gives them that little bit of that extra inch, that extra centimeter that allows him to get the shot off. And Chris Paul probably would have done that against every single player tonight. He was just switched on. But it certainly didn't hurt. But the dunks from Jared Allen tonight, dear Lord. I mean, Seko Demboya had a pretty insane dunk, but I lost it. I absolutely lost it at that insane alley-oop. And, you know, we've been preaching aggression from our boy Jared Allen, and he seemed to have that again tonight. And then there was some blocks where it looked like he was going to break Terrence Ferguson's freaking wrist. The guy is just, when he is on, he impacts so much.
Yeah, that was probably the best block of his career in terms of actual blocks. Like, yeah, he blocked big names, but he just destroyed that. And he knew he was going to destroy it. If you watch it, I think he pushes a Baisley before the play. He lines it up. He throws it back. And then also the dunks. I think we've been preaching about it. Hey, Jared Allen, you're super athletic and lanky. You can dunk over a lot of these guys. They might be stronger than you, but you can go over the top. And to see him finally do that felt good. And it's like, you can continue to do this game after game after game. And if you don't finish a dunk, you're probably going to go to the free throw line.
Yeah, and in that sense, the imagination, you know, the box score doesn't light the world on fire, but 12.7 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 absolutely insane blocks. You know, it was good to see, you know, the Jared Allen that we've loved. And you know, he doesn't necessarily have to stuff the stat sheet. He just needs to have impact plays and impact the game. And, you know, our bigs haven't been impacting that well. You know, DeAndre tonight as well was frustrating at times, but he was rebounding the ball really well and seemed to be a little bit more switched on. You know, I get frustrated at him because it seems like to me that he wants to get more offensive boards than defensive boards. He seems to care more about that. Like, he doesn't jump at all on defensive boards, like I said in the last episode. But at the end of the day, he had an 8 and 10 and a steal as well. So, you know, he was impacting the game too. Our bigs, you know, who we've been savaging a little bit and probably ripping into quite a bit in this losing streak, were able to step up and at least make an impact. And that's all you want out of your big men.
Yeah, DeAndre played good enough for the Nets to win tonight. He wasn't outstanding, but he played a solid role off the bench. And like you mentioned, I think on the boards, you'd like to see him attack a little bit more. But at certain times, I felt like he wanted to get into Steven Adams and kind of match that physicality. It like got him going, which we haven't necessarily seen a lot from him. But DeAndre were to perform this way, you know, consistently, I wouldn't be that upset. Like you said, there was a couple plays that make you upset, but there was a couple plays that make you happy. I think he's still starting to develop, trying to develop a chemistry with Caris LeVert.
Yeah, and I thought Caris is doing nicely because he loves a little wraparound pass. And they're really fun plays to watch. And he did it a million times to Jared Allen over his career so far. And he got one of those to DJ tonight as well. So it's about his positioning in terms of DeAndre Jordan in the pick and roll and being able to be there, because Caris is going to draw the attention. And the fact that he has been able to, and I mean, not to keep talking about your boy. No, I think you'll probably love it. I'll keep speaking about it. But he is impacting so quickly, and it shows the level of confidence that we probably haven't seen from Caris in the past. And yes, he's got that contract now, and he's set up for a few years. But last year when he came back, he was actually quite poor, and maybe it was the nature of the injury, obviously certainly had an impact on that. But most guys in any form of the imagination, when it comes back, you have to find those game reps. You know, you can't simulate, you know, game reps. And obviously the Nets are pretty cautious and will like to give extra practices, extra contact, all those sort of things. But the confidence that Karras has, if he's not playing 30 minutes against the Hawks and in some form of the imagination, if he isn't at least close to leading the team in minutes, maybe continuing him in this role, I don't care, but he needs to be getting more minutes at Garrett Temple.
Yeah, you can just feel the impact, and get, you know, I don't care. We'll talk about Karis LeVert the entire show. It's up to me. But no, you really felt like, hey, Karis LeVert is like almost better than he was to start the season tonight. He just felt so confident out there, not only just creating for himself, but creating for others. Like, he just literally scored 20 points in his second game back. He hasn't played basketball in months. And, you know, a lot of the turnovers are still kind of chemistry things. You can kind of see he's trying to get a feel for that second unit. You know, you have to remember, he'd never logged any minutes with TLC, never logged any minutes with Wilson Chandler, and his minute log with Garrett Temple and DeAndre Jordan is pretty limited too. So I think he'll continue to get better. And like you said, Jack, I don't think it matters if he's in this role, if he's starting whatever it is. He just needs to see a high octane in minutes because he just provides such an impact. And he also provides the Nets a real isolation score. Like, Spencer can score an ISO, but like you mentioned, it's really just attacking the rim, especially when his pull-up three's not there. Karras can still attack and score not only at the rim, but he can score in that mid-range and score at the three-point line. So I think he's almost he can score at all three levels, where Spencer's more of a two-level scorer.
Yeah, that's an incredibly savvy point, Nick. And the fact that Karras has that ability, it adds another dimension to the Nets offense. And, you know, we've struggled, you know, mightily on the offensive end. So, I mean, it's frustrating because it's almost like a wasted performance from Karras LeVert in ways. You know, when you have one of your guys step up, you know, it's like when LeBron had that insane 51-point performance, you know, in game one of the finals, probably one of the best games we've ever seen a player play. Yeah, J.R. Smith throws it away with just his dumb
decision. I don't think this game's as bad.
Of course not. I mean, you get a little hyperbolic in the moment, and I think I'm certainly doing that. But at the end of the day, we are fans of this team, so we get way too emotionally invested in it. And, you know, the word fan comes from fanatic, and we're going to get fanatical about it sometimes. And I think I'm probably
especially on a losing streak.
Exactly. When you're so close to getting that W, and you're getting back and you're reestablishing yourself in that playoff race, because, you know, Orlando, you know, are better than us right now and are overtaking us in the standings. And it's just frustrating. It's just so frustrating.
It is. And I mean, just even just Torian Prince, if he has his game in like three of the six games or seven games on a losing streak, the Nets probably win one or two of those games. It's just like having all these guys step up, and then the one guy you've been able to count on having one of his worst games of the season, Spencer Dinwiddie, it's rough. But I think there was still plenty of positives to take away from this game, as, you know, bad of a sour of a feeling it's left you with. I feel like this was one game, you know, not including overtime, that I can enjoy as a Nets fan. There was just a lot of good play, competitive play, highlight plays, and like you kind of mentioned, we were able to put out some actual good lineups where there weren't a ton of holes, or the other team actually had to worry about more than one player.
Yeah, if we're looking at it as objectively as possible, Nick, but we're not, because we're Brooklyn Nets fans. If we were a general NBA podcast dissecting this game, we would say, wow, that was a fun game. Chris Paul went off late. Karras LeVert was really good. A lot of dunks, a lot of blocks. It was really fun. But we are Brooklyn Nets fans, so it's hard to sort of look past it, especially, you know, 10 minutes after the game when we record these sort of pods. But I do agree. It was a really fun game to watch. You know, a lot of highlight plays. You know, the dunks were fun. You know, it was just an offensive masterpiece from the likes of Chris Paul, who is just an absolute stud. But at the end of the day, you know, it's when you are a specific team fan and you're doing a specific team pod and you're as invested as yourself and I are, Nick, the fact that the Nets were right there and, you know, they had it in their hands and it was just like they threw it. It wasn't taken from them. It was partly through Chris Paul's performance, but they had the win, and it was really key mistakes from people we expect better from that lost us the game. And I've probably said some version of that a million times on this 20, 30 minute pod, but I got to keep reiterating it because it's what stuck out tonight.
I mean, they did lead the entire fourth quarter essentially until like that last minute or two. And that's always, I think, really deflating when you cannot hold the lead, especially OKC obviously has talented players, including Chris Paul, SGA, but Gallinari wasn't playing tonight, and a lot of other guys were missing shots. So the opportunity was there. So I understand, Jack. Like, and you're on the losing streak. You want to take this one. But anything else you want to dive into? What do you think was just a major issue for the team for the reason they didn't win this game, other than closing out? Like, a reoccurring theme through all four quarters.
I think offensive execution, Nick. You know, I think that the Nets held the lead from about 60 when they were up 70-69. They took it back, and then they held that for pretty much the entire game up until when Chris Paul just went off. And maybe some defensive tweaks needed to be made there, you know, in terms of when they got the switch, being a little bit smarter about it, like we sort of spoke about with Jared Allen. You know, maybe, you know, being a bit more physical with Chris Paul. Maybe if you give away a foul on one of them, maybe that makes Chris Paul think a little bit in his head. I'm not saying to give away a foul, because Chris Paul is probably one of the best free throw shooters in the history of the game, if not right now, at least. So I think that there was just minor things other than the big things that we've already spoken about. You know, it was just silly decision-making from Spencer Dinwiddie at the end of the day. And I'm not necessarily putting it all on him, but it was Spencer and Kenny that lost us this game.
Yeah, a lot of bad decision making, I think, from Kenny, with obviously not playing Caris LeVert late in the game. And then we've already harped on Spencer the entire show, just not having that aggressiveness attacking the rim. And I think in that situation, to kind of go after Kenny, maybe just a touch, whereas like, hey, force the ball to Chris Paul's hand, especially when he dominated you in the fourth quarter overtime. You want to get out of his hands. You know, let Steven Adams try to get it down low and foul him. Don't let him get a free throw. He was missing free throws left and right. I think you want to force the ball into somebody's hands that isn't necessarily going to score in that situation. I think, you know, out of Chris Paul, out of SGA, Dennis Schroeder, I didn't think was great tonight. Try to force him to create things. I just think the Nets almost made it too easy for OKC to come back in this game late.
Yeah, I think you're making a pretty salient point there, Nick. And I think that sometimes the Nets aren't smart enough to do that without, you know, coaching instruction. And I know Kyrie has said that at the start of the season, when, you know, Kenny's holding up the signs and all those little things. And, you know, Kyrie has been around this league long enough. He's one of the most savvy, intelligent basketballers that we've ever seen. So for a lot of these guys that are out there right now to make on-court, you know, execution and changes, you know, sometimes requires someone stepping up. And we didn't have those guys tonight, but, you know, we're sort of nitpicking, because at the end of the day, despite the 8-point loss, you know, to score one basket in OT, to go down 10-2, I mean, that's essentially how we've performed in fourth quarters of late, where I think we're minus 42 over four games. And I know I put out in my Nets Republic game summary from the Orlando Magic game, we're the third worst scoring fourth quarter team in the league.
Yeah, and that's obviously when you're missing one of the best fourth quarter scorers in the league in Kyrie Irving, and then probably one of your second best ISO scorer in Caris LeVert. That's going to happen. Hopefully next time we're recording, Jack, we're talking about a win. But anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
If we can bring this.
Do you think the starting lineup will change for next game, or do you think it will roll with the one we saw tonight?
I'm happy with it to stay the way it is, Nick. And as long as, you know, we see, you know, Caris LeVert, you know, late 20s in minutes, I'm happy with that. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's going to be hard to get a win against the Heat, who have been struggling of late. And, you know, Jimmy Butler seems to be a notorious Nets killer. That's going to be a tough one. But if we can bring the same semblance of play and execute a little bit better, and have our best player play better, and have our second best player actually play extra minutes when it really matters, then the Nets will win with a shot.
Yeah, and maybe that second best and first best player thing will change after the next two games. But that wraps it up for today. As always, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.